You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
That was indeed Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party, and I actually wanted to look further into this discussion and this bill. We've touched on it before on 95BFM, but seeing as it is taking its time, I wanted to understand the importance of these changes and what they could offer, as well as why it changes. As why those changes should happen sooner rather than later. So first, some context. As I stated in the interview, New Zealand's justice system as it is sees 13% of rape prosecutions succeed and only 15% of allegations even get to court. So what that means is there are a huge number of people that do not get justice from following through with a police complaint. And as I alluded to in the interview, one of the reasons those cases do not go to court at all is the way in which, for women in particular, they are subjected to scathing judgment and analysis in order to prove you were assaulted. A Twitter thread online has printed a number of quotes made by judges during rape trials, and a content warning here before I read these, that these quotes and language are harmful. So one judge addressing the jury during a trial said, quote, "As the gentleman on the jury will understand, when a woman says no, she doesn't always mean it. Men can't turn their emotions on and off like a tap, like some women can," end quote. Another judge in 2008 stated, quote, "The victim in this case, although she wasn't necessarily willing, she didn't put up a fight," end quote. Another judge told the convicted rapist in the case, quote, "You showed concern and consideration by wearing a contraceptive," end quote. Another statement, and this one came from a police officer, quote, "Women should avoid dressing like sluts in order not to be victimized," end quote. These are just some of the ideas that permeate society about sexual assault victims. In fact, you might say this says a lot more about the society who's willing to convict a survivor as opposed to the perpetrator who has caused harm. I wanted to know what that actually does say about society, and I reached out to Paulette Benton-Grieg, who is from the Law Faculty at the University of Waikato. She's done work on care and support for the complainant, as well as how rape myths are barriers to a fair trial process. Here's Paulette.
So, you know, we have a history of women and sex being thought about in particular kinds of ways, and many of those ideas still operate as norms in society. So we have evidence that people, large numbers of people, believe, for instance, that if a woman has been drinking and then she's raped, she's at least partly responsible for that. She should not have got drunk, for instance. So those are the broad kinds of ideas that still operate in our society around gender and sex. And they can be drawn upon, I think, in particular kinds of ways through questioning of complainants in rape trials. So when you want to put into evidence the sexual history of a complainant, and let's say, for instance, this is something that I saw in some research I worked on recently, whenever there was an opportunity, I think, to bring in her history of having had a threesome, for instance, with the defendant and someone else, that seemed to turn up quite a lot. Oh, by the way, you did this and did that, didn't you? You know, that's a kind of an attempt, I think, to smear the kind of reputation of the complainant, or at least to bring her credibility into question. And so this rule that is being proposed in the bill would mean that before a defence lawyer could ask those kinds of questions, they would need to go to the judge and say, I intend to ask these questions. And the judge would have to say, well, show me how that is really relevant. How is that really relevant here? It needs to have some specific form of relevance rather than just a general kind of, you had a threesome with him before, so maybe he thought you might want to do that again.
Catherine McPhillips, Executive Director of Sex Abuse Support Service Help, has criticised the justice system and defence lawyers for the way she says they trample on the mental health and dignity of the complainant in sexual violence trials. Quote, "The alleged offender's right to a fair trial has degraded to an immoral standard of get them off at any cost," end quote. And this also can result in the sexual history of the survivor being picked apart. So what should be clear? That someone's sexual history is not relevant to whether they were assaulted. What the new bill means then, for one, as Alison Moore, who has done considerable reporting and research into this area, has put it, judges will be required to instruct juries on myths and misconceptions around sexual assault, which should help ensure that juries are no longer obsessing about how short a victim's skirt was or whether she screamed and how loudly. Furthermore, and this is still Alison Moore, survivors will have a guaranteed right to appropriate facilities at court rather than the grim and featureless waiting spaces where they might regularly bump into the family of their alleged perpetrator. They will be able to give their victim impact statement, often full of incredibly personal information, by AV link instead of in open court. They will be shielded from the most inappropriate questioning by the judge, who will be required by law to step in and put a stop to it. State sector worker, Jesse Smith, says it means you wouldn't have to breathe the same air as the accused, because regardless of whether you're behind a screen or not, you know they are in the room. Back to Paulette Benton-Greig again on the bill and the concept of fair trials.
So the bill makes a number of changes to the ways in which evidence can be presented in court. And for listeners who are familiar with issues around sexual violence trials will know that evidence in case is generally focused around what the complainant has to say about what happened and, you know, the evidence that she, often, because we're talking about adult rape cases, has to give about consent and whether she consented. And ordinarily, the defence role is to ask her questions to suggest that either she was consenting or that the defendant or the accused had a reasonable belief, had grounds to believe that she was consenting. So there's this kind of contest of stories and narratives and evidence is given. And one of the ways that, one of the rules that we currently have is that defendants are not allowed to ask questions to the complainant about her sexual experience with people other than the accused. And the reason we have that rule is that in the past, what we saw was that kind of evidence being used to do two things. One was to suggest that she was a, I guess it was slut-shaming in some ways. You know, you've had sex with this person and this is your reputation, and therefore the defendant thought you were consenting to have sex with him. And it called into question both her credibility in the sense of using those kinds of myths that operate in society, that women who are sexually active are less believable about sex, so that's credibility, and then also consent, that he might have thought that because you had consented to sex with someone else, that you would consent to sex with him. So those are what we call the twin myths that sexual experience evidence has been used for and may be used for at trial. And there's a bar on that at the moment, or at least a heightened relevance test in relation to sexual experience, which means that they can't put that evidence in relation to someone other than the defendant. What is proposed in this legislation is that that will be extended to cover the defendant. So that means that the sexual history of the person, the complainant, with the actual defendant can't be put into evidence unless the defence can demonstrate a high level of relevance to that material. And that is being objected to.
Just a final note then on this kind of question around a fair trial. Do you have any comments about that?
I think there's an issue here around fair for whom and how do we balance the issues of fairness. So some defence lawyers, and I don't think all defence lawyers are against these changes at all. I think it's a group. Are concerned that any kind of limits on what it is that they can offer as evidence or use as evidence reduces the ability of defendants to defend themselves. And they should be entitled to defend themselves. After all, the consequences are really significant. They may go to jail for a really long time. Those of us who work in other areas perhaps, who see more of the complainant side of things, are really concerned about the effects of the ways in which questioning happens in court and the decisions that are made about what gets to court, because ultimately complainants, people who have been sexually harmed, don't report and don't want to go to court because they fear what will happen in court, and frankly, rightly so. So we're trying to find ways in which we can reduce those impacts in order that we can increase reporting and we can increase trust and faith in the criminal justice system and ultimately contribute to that kind of reduction and elimination of sexual violence. Those two things do come into tension, and we need to find ways through that we can protect the defendant's ability to bring evidence that is exculpatory or shows that they're not guilty, and to enable complainants to come to court knowing that they're not going to be brutalised and re-harmed. I understand their concerns, and yet I think that they are unfounded. On the whole, we can look to other jurisdictions where these kinds of changes have been made and they don't experience the problems that the defence bar are concerned about. Western Australia, for instance, when we talk to them about their system, they're like, we expected or we had concerns about that, but actually now that we're using it, it's fine and we don't have those problems. I understand their fears, but I think that we can't work out how to... We can't work out the way forward without actually doing the thing and working out with the tension points and making it work better. So unless we move forward with this, we're left with is a fear. We can't actually put it into practice and see how to make it work well for everybody.
That was Paulette Benton-Greig, and we just had a couple of texts in during that, someone saying, what about teaching men not to rape no matter what a woman wears? And then also saying, what about when they get off or have name suppression because it would affect the man's career? And I just wanted to read another tweet from that thread. It's quite a lengthy thread, but this one is from a judge speaking to someone who was convicted, so guilty of rape, saying, I hope you'll be able to keep your well-paid job and the couple of weeks you spend in prison will be treated by employers as part of your holidays. Yeah. So just to finish on this piece, I got in touch with Jan Logie of the Green Party, who is in charge of this bill, to find out when this bill is going to be passed. We didn't have time to speak, but she provided us with a written statement. Quote, this bill is about ensuring sexual violence trials are based on finding the facts and getting real justice, not re-traumatising victims and survivors. We have decades of research and reports showing the process isn't working and isn't delivering real justice. Every provision in this legislation is founded on solid evidence and in some cases has been in place for almost 20 or 30 years overseas without issue. I'm hopeful the bill will be passed before the election and will be really disappointed if it isn't for every victim and survivor of sexual violence in Aotearoa who deserves better. End quote. We'll be back just after this.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.